Welcome to DLC, your downloadable content for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, absolutely free. And that is thanks to our sponsor this week, New Relic. They are the people making that possible, and we are grateful. DLC, of course, is the show all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm Jeff Cannata, and I'm joined by my co-host slash nemesis, my rash that will not go away, Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hey, Jeff, one, congrats on great reviews on your new play. Fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Two, my voice sounds a little different. We are in our new place, but I'm in mostly boxes, so I don't have my studio mic set up. So I'm on a little different mic, but I'm here and I'm alive and I'm doing it, you know? I'm doing it.
Christian in mostly boxes. What is DLC? Of course, this week, DLC is a dash of lighthearted Cannata, diminished a little by Christian.
Man, and why? Also, no, you don't get to move on from that. I'm sorry. It's not fair. You just make fun of me and I'm so nice to you. This isn't a nemesis ship. This is just, you're a jerk.
Well, guess what else DLC is this week? It is, we're delighted to lead off with Corey because we have managing editor of PC Games joining us this week, Corey Banks. Welcome, Corey.
Hey, Jeff, how's it going?
Not to be confused with Cody Banks, which I said because I'm a giant a-hole, and I missaid his name when we were teasing his appearance on the show a couple of weeks ago.
Half the man Frankie Muntz is.
It led to new edit of JPEG of the Cody Banks movie poster on Gamers with Jobs. So that was something good came of it. But I apologize for that, Corey, and I'm really glad you're here.
Not a concern. Thanks for having me, guys. Big fan of the show.
Oh, thank you. We got a lot of crazy news this week, so I think we should hop right into Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. Someday you guys are going to hear some remix of that, and you're going to be like, it was a good idea all along, Jeff. Okay, Story of the Week, of course, is the segment where we try to convince one another of what the most important video or tabletop gaming-related story was this week. A lot of kind of controversial negative news this week. Corey, I'm curious what you think the Story of the Week is. What do you think was the most important story this week, Corey?
I think probably the most interesting to me right now is Rod Ferguson going to Microsoft.
Yeah, that is really interesting. Of course, he's the old series producer on, or one of the series producers on Gears of War. And right. He went off and worked on BioShock Infinite with 2K. And now Microsoft is back acquiring the rights to do Gears of War and bringing him along for the ride. You excited about this? You think it's a good thing for the franchise? Tell me what you're... thoughts are.
So I think it's interesting because, you know, a lot of people consider Gears of War to be almost like the defining moment of the last console generation, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'd necessarily agree with that, but I'm also not looking at big blockbuster titles most of the time. And Rod Ferguson, you know, was previously at Irrational, helped with BioShock Infinite, and then moved on from there. He's apparently held up as like the owner of this franchise now, and Microsoft wants to put this franchise in front of this new console generation, and Rod's going to be the one driving that. I guess the most interesting bit to me is like, is Gears of War really what we want out of this new console generation?
That is a great question. Christian, what do you think? Do you think is Gears of War what's going to get you all excited to fire up your Xbox One by saying, hey, Xbox One, turn on, dude?
So a beautiful version, an even more beautiful version of Gears of War. I have a signed San Diego Comic-Con poster from Gears of War 2 that was showing when they're drilling down into the Lambient, and there's just like hordes, I know horde mode, but like hordes of enemies. And if the Xbox One can deliver that type of image and gameplay, then I think a Gears of War could be a system seller, another system seller for the Xbox One. Going into it, that's not the game that I am jazzed up for, you know, because I feel like we've seen those experiences. I didn't play Judgment because I feel like 3 and you know, finished the series for me really well. But I mean, I think there's potential there, and there's certainly so much money on the table that there's no way. Because I had heard, you know, little birdies had been chirping that this next gen expect to see Gears on both consoles. So it looks like there was potentially truth to those rumors, and Microsoft was like, nope.
Yeah.
You know, I'm remiss in not mentioning the fact that you can call in and participate in our discussion by calling 512-518-5714 if you are listening live. We will accept your calls to talk about all the stuff we're talking about this week. Again, 512-518-5714. We've also got a live chat room at 5x5.tv/chat. And if you're having to listen to this time shifted, downloaded, which you can download at 5x5.tv/DLC, you can also email us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. So the most recent Gears of War game, you're right, I can't even remember the freaking name of it because it is that small in my mind. Do you think that diminished the series, the franchise? Is it still a top tier kind of system seller franchise?
So I have to be honest here. Like I think the first Gears of War was certainly a system seller. And it, I mean, I have fond memories. Like I bought my 360 to get that, right? I was actually a late joiner to the 360. Cult's too strong of a word, but certainly like that fan base. And the 360 was my favorite console for most of that console generation. I didn't really feel the pull to keep playing the series, you know, even into Gears of War 3. Like, it kind of became derivative in terms of its gameplay. It wasn't adding a lot, but a lot like, well, I almost compared it to Halo, but Halo has added a lot in its recent versions. So
yeah,
I think it's interesting that Microsoft wants to position this as their big, you know, lead franchise alongside Halo. Because I don't know if it has the legs for it.
I have to jump in and disagree. I mean, Jeff, do you agree? Or if you agree, let's hear that first, and then I can shake my head a whole bunch.
Well, no, I mean, I think that Gears of War certainly still resonates for people. I think that it's, especially if it comes out and looks all shiny and new and spectacular. I don't think I agree with you, Christian, in the sense that just having lots more enemies on the screen is going to be enough. I think it really does need to be iterative in a different kind of way, and it, you know, it's interesting. If these are the only two franchises that Microsoft is leaning on, I think that's a bad thing. Halo and Gears of War, even though they are strong, I think Gears of War really heralded the arrival of the 360 as a force to be reckoned with, and I think the Xbox One needs that kind of fresh new IP.
Absolutely. Yeah.
As well. So tell me why you think Gears of War is the end all be all, Christian.
Well, yeah, exactly. One, I think it's silly to assume that Microsoft isn't also trying to pursue new IPs, or at least through third-party partnerships, trying to pursue new IPs. I mean, they're not dumb. They have Titanfall coming. They invested in Dead Rising 3, and you know, there's other stuff.
Definitely a new IP there.
No, that's not. But I'm saying they're not just relying on these two pillars. I also think that adding tons and tons and tons of enemies does change the gameplay of Gears of War, because all of a sudden you have to pop in and out of cover more, flank more, move around, versus in Gears 1, 2, and 3, you were able to, you know, find your spot and come out and take your pop shots.
Pop into cover and flank around. And
no,
I mean,
you didn't
that's
have
the game.
To, you didn't
it's
have
the
to repeat. Move as much. You didn't have to move as much. Enemies would come through choke points. You could find your spot. You'd move once or twice in a battle. Even on hard difficulty run by enemies, it will change the gameplay. I also think that Gears of War Judgment doesn't tarnish the franchise. I mean, if Gears of War 5 or whatever they call it, 4, just the Gears or whatever name they
Gears of War, the Gears.
I mean, Street Fighter EX came out, and Street Fighter 4 is amazing. You know what I mean? Like, and I, for the same token, I don't think God of War Ascension hurts the God of War franchise. There are oftentimes less than stellar games in these long-running franchises. I mean, even Mario has had games that don't live up, like Sunshine. Did Sunshine coming out make Galaxy any worse? No, I mean, I think people move past that, and the characters are well-loved. They've supported comics. They've supported merchandise. There's a strong fan base for it. And I'm not saying they will, but I'm saying there's a possibility for this to be a really, really great game.
I want to back up and just point out that you compared Gears of War to a franchise like Mario. Like, I'm not sure that you can. Like, I'm not so sure that Gears of War is a strong enough franchise to support weaker titles in the series in the way that like Mario could with Sunshine. Or I think God of War is a interesting comparison, right? In that, I mean, I don't think anyone looks at God of War as like a system selling franchise anymore. It's a cool game to have, and I really hope it
might end
PS4
up being
version.
One. You know, you depending so? On what the next one looks like, it might end up being something very powerful for PS4 if the next God of War is
the
really.
The last God of War game was kind of multiplayer arena battle focused, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we all agree that was sort of a misstep. But it was something
to do with the IP. Like, I don't even know if I'd say it's a misstep. It was just like, here's it. It kind of looked to me like it didn't take a ton of development time. Mm-hmm. See, what I would want from a system selling franchise, and this is this is why I don't work at Microsoft or Sony, right? I would want something that has an interesting gameplay mechanic or hook, a great narrative focus, and lots of marketing budget behind it. And the first Gears of War had that. It kind of heralded the renaissance of co-op gaming, especially mm-hmm. on the consoles. It had the cover mechanics, which at the time had been very new, and we've seen, you know, all over the place now. And it had that commercial with the slow ballad, weepy version of Mad World playing. Right, it had tons of marketing budget behind it. That's what made it a system seller. Where's the new hook in that game? Because no one's playing it for the story. No one is interested in what Marcus's squad is going to do next. Right, against the Locust.
I would argue
that poor old Dom. Everybody cares about poor old Dom and his sad family life.
I would argue, and this might get me some flack, but I will defend it. I don't know if there's such a thing as a system seller anymore, the way that there used to be, that people still talk about, you know, a pack-in game or this game coming out and finally moving tons and tons of systems. I mean, maybe if Minecraft was exclusive to something like that. But I mean, what was
I think you're crazy. I think there are definitely system sellers. I just think we haven't really. I mean, I think Titanfall is going to either prove or disprove that. But I think there will certainly be those games that, oh my God, when a game comes out, it's the, oh my God, I have to play it, and it's only on this console. That's going to be a system seller. And I think that Titanfall has the ability to be that, the potential to be that. And, hopefully, you know, there'll be more gigantic, cool games coming out from both of these manufacturers that fall into that category. But I think saying that doesn't exist anymore is a little short-sighted.
Well, I think Titanfall is not exclusive to the Xbox One, though.
Well, but that's true. That's a very good point, heck of a lot of people already have 360s that they can play it on.
I kind of agree with Christian. I don't know that the system seller really exists anymore, because you're going to see more of these games on you know, multiple platforms.
Yeah.
And maybe this was Microsoft's attempt to lock down Gears of War, and someone saying, well, you know, this did so well for us last generation. Let's make sure that the only place that people can play it is on something Microsoft specific. Which is me kind of saying, I'd love to have this on the PC.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think that the thing that we haven't even brought up yet is the idea of decoupling this franchise with Epic. Does that hurt the series? Because I think, from my perspective, the Gears of War series has always been synonymous with, oh my God, look at those graphics. And certainly the Xbox One would benefit from having something that was like, whoa, we are googly-eyed, and oh my gosh, we're in the next gen. Look at this. Because that's really what Gears of War was for the 360. It's like, we are in the next gen. Look at this. And to not have not have Epic have this vested interest in showing off their engine in the same way they did with Gears of War the first time around, and only having Microsoft doing it, does that hurt?
Well, do we know that's not the case?
Well, I know that Epic is not involved. I mean, that seems to be what the story is that they are no longer doing it.
They're not designing it, but I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm trying to pull up the news story again real fast just to verify. Like, do we know for sure that it's not going to be using like Unreal Engine 4?
Well, it certainly may, and it certainly still may be impressive to look at. I'm just saying, I think these companies that are selling their engines and have intimate knowledge with it when they are the developer of the game itself, certainly I feel like it shows off what the engine can do much more than having a third-party developer work with a new engine. But I could be wrong. Maybe you guys can disagree with me.
I mean, I agree. I think when someone, you know, Epic has always, or traditionally, you know, released a game that champions what their engine can do. And to some extent, while they lost, you know, Silicon Knights' lawsuit against Epic was saying, you know, look, you didn't give us the tools to make the game as pretty as you could have made it. You didn't give us all the tools. I mean, they lost that lawsuit, so maybe there's no validity in that claim, but it's interesting. However, I do think Microsoft is capable of making, you know, some great games. And Rod, you would assume, is very familiar with the workings of an Unreal Engine coming from Epic, you know, two or three jobs ago. And, you know, 343, while using a different engine, and while Halo wasn't, I mean, I'm sorry, yeah, 343, while Halo and Bungie wasn't necessarily known for its graphical prowess, Halo 4 looked amazing, you know? I mean, so I think the potential's there for a great-looking game. And then lastly, about system sellers, I don't mean that a game can't come out and bump console sales for that system, but that's the literal definition of system seller. But I think as people use it, you know, commonly they're referring to that thing that, you know, this game comes out, Xbox One takes a huge lead in the marketplace because of this quote unquote system seller. And I don't think that type of game necessarily exists for either console.
All right, I'm going to go to the phones early today and see what guys are thinking about with regard to this story. I have a caller on the line from 479 area code. What do you think of the news that Gears of War is coming to Microsoft exclusively? And what do you think it needs to be to make it the big deal that it was on the 360?
Hey, Jeff. Glad to be here. Can you hear me okay?
I can indeed, yes. Go ahead.
Okay, great, yeah. As far as Gears being a Microsoft exclusive, it's one of those games, I think, kind of like Metal Gear feels like a Sony game. Mm-hmm. Gears just feels like an Xbox game. And maybe that's just the status quo, but to me, if I'm going to play Gears, I'm probably going to play it on Xbox.
Right.
And I don't necessarily think that it's a system seller for me, though. I'm a 36-year-old gamer, and any kind of a shooter anymore, unless it's got something really new,
yeah,
isn't going to make me go out and buy an Xbox One. I love.
So it sounds like you think the Gears franchise is a little tired. Are you not? You're not jazzed for a new installment in the Gears franchise, even if it's on a shiny new engine?
I'm not. A shiny new engine, I can kind of just imagine what that would be. What I need is, I think what some of the other guys were saying, is a hook. I know somebody said that people don't really play Gears for the story. But personally, I'm not a big multiplayer gamer. Like I said, I'm 36, and so I kind of grew up playing games by myself. And so I do play for narratives. And yeah, I admit the Gears narrative isn't really groundbreaking, but I enjoyed it. And yeah, I read the books, you know, and I thought they were okay. I think Karen Travis may have wrote a couple of them. She's a good author. I like the world. I like Marcus's story, but it seems like they really buttoned that up with this last one. So if there's going to be a new one, if I'm just taking cover and hopping and popping, that's fun. And I think those games are awesome. But I'm not going to spend $400 or $500 to do that again unless there's really something impressive that they've come up with that we haven't thought of.
Well, that's a great call. I appreciate it. What do you guys think of this idea of having the narrative really shake things up? Maybe a new planet, something that looks wildly different. Is that something that could inject some new life into Gears of War?
I think a new protagonist. I think probably a different planet, but like setting it in the same world, having it, you know, maybe throwing it in the not too far future, maybe, but like, or maybe even the far future.
Isn't the new protagonist sort of what took down the last one? I mean, I feel like it needs to be Marcus's game, doesn't it? To feel like a mainline big deal Gears of War.
No, I think it needs to have Rhodey running to feel like Gears of War. Like, I don't think Gears of War is defined by its characters that much. I think there's been a
whole bunch of Gears of War games that came out lately.
I think Gears of War, at least for me, has always been more defined by its gameplay and actually even more its like multiplayer than any of the single player stuff. Even so far as like the hook for playing single player for me was actually playing co-op and playing through that story. I didn't want to play with bots. So yeah. It's a great franchise for showing off strong technology and a great engine. And I think Unreal Engine 4 on Xbox One could really be impressive. And then it helps push that multiplayer, like this is the game that all of your friends are going to be playing angle. And so from that perspective, it can make some sense as a system seller.
Mm-hmm. All right, Christian, what is your pick for story of the week? Are you in agreement with Corey or no?
I mean, I think it's the thing that I'm most interested in. Yes. I think if we were to poll listeners and you and I talked about this briefly, I still think the YouTube thing is still burning a fire under people's, you know, feet and getting people angry, which seems to get the most talk on the internet. Personally though, yeah. I would agree that the Gear story to me is more interesting.
Well, let's talk about this a little bit because it happened early in the week, and so it was basically right after the last episode of DLC came out. This story broke from Ars Technica with the details of this marketing campaign, evidently, that Microsoft got into, which, you know, as the week went on, we kind of got the idea that it's not all that uncommon, and Microsoft certainly isn't the only one doing it. But it's the idea of paying YouTubers, guys that get on YouTube and tell their opinion of games, to talk favorably about Xbox One. And there has been a whole lot of fallout. A lot of people were really mad, and I think, you know, justifiably so, feeling like they'd been misled. And you know, as the week went on, we saw reactions from these big, gigantic, you know, huge subscriber base YouTubers like Boogie2988, who said that this is basically the norm. This is how it works. You should be aware that, you know, a lot of these big time YouTubers get offers like this all the time. And it's added CPM to their ad buys for talking about specific products in a good light. We also saw a story that Conan O'Brien, who does those Clueless Gamer sketches, got money for talking about a specific game in one of his sketches. And certainly, you know, from my perspective, as somebody who has been doing this for a number of years, I have never taken any money to talk about a game positively. We definitely took ad buys from video games when we were doing the Totally Rad show, but in every single case, we then did not cover that game editorially at all. So we only had integrated ads for those games and no review, no discussion of those games. And I really was very conscientious about that because I think it's super important not to blur that line. So, Christian, now that I've given a little context, what's your take on all this?
Yeah, so I think you did a great job explaining it. And to me, the reason I'm glad it happened is that it's an unfortunate world we live in, but I'm glad that the issue has been brought to people's attention. Because I think as a consumer of media or anything really, you need to be aware and don't be jaded, but just be aware and form your own opinions. And, you know, things like the James Bond movies, for example, you know, had a buy from Heineken beer that anything he drank other than his patented martini, shaken, not stirred, would be a Heineken beer. And initially, I believe, if I remember this from years ago, they tried to keep that under wraps. And then the story came out and people got furious because they're, you know, changing a beloved character and whatever, whatever, whatever. And I think, you know, you watch TV like 24, I think they always were in Fords. And just pay attention to these things. And I think you can still enjoy some of these YouTubers' content. And sometimes they give you early access looks to games, and that can help formulate your opinion. But I do think when you're trying to find like trusted reviewers, you know, go in with your eyes wide open and listen to what they're saying and then understand maybe why they're saying it, and then always be ready to form your own opinion. So I'm glad the story broke, because I think it helps remind people to be diligent about making sure you know what you're watching. I think it's unfortunate, you know, the people have said nasty things, and I don't think that accomplishes anything. Like, just yelling at people doesn't accomplish anything. But I do, I am glad that the discussion is being had, but I would just want to say, let's keep it as a discussion, because when you start yelling and punching, both sides clam up and you don't get anywhere, if that makes sense.
Corey, you've been a games journalist for a long time. You are now a managing editor at PC Gamer. I'm sure you have come face to face with this issue lots of times. What is your take on it?
I've never been offered money to talk about a game, but if anybody wants to pay me to play Dark Souls, ready to go. Ironically, I have not been faced with this question that much. We've never been offered money to cover a game at PC Gamer. We do have sponsored content there. And that's totally separate. There's like a big giant wall between sales and editorial. And Gamers with Jobs, you know, it was very much the same thing, and to the point where like we kind of just say what we want anyway. It doesn't surprise me, however, that there's often money being thrown around for people to talk about games, and that's just kind of a fact of media. Like, if you watch an episode of Law and Order, like, you're going to see product placement. You really see it on like TV shows like 30 Rock, where they make a joke out of it. And I think Christian's absolutely right. It's important to just be aware of what media you're consuming and how much that is influenced by whatever is going on. It's tough for me to talk about, because I don't tend to be distrustful of the media that I read. I feel like I can tell like when something seems a little too biased. And I think a lot of you know, our listeners here and a lot of people who read content online in games journalism can do the same thing, which is why there's such an uproar over this sort of thing.
So. Yeah, you know, it's a complicated topic, and I think that a lot of the perception from fans is that people are sitting around lying on their beds of $100 stacks of bills and laughing as they tell you lies about games online. And I think there is a tiny, 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 tiny portion of people who make any money at all doing this, let alone enough money to make it, you know, to corrupt them. But it's a complicated thing, because we're in a situation where people want what they want, i.e. videos and articles and coverage of video games, but they don't want to pay for it and they don't want to watch ads. So you are in a situation where the people who make that stuff are trying to make a living, and the people who advertise for that stuff are trying to get their ads in front of eyeballs, and the people's eyeballs don't want to look at their ads, so they're trying to circumvent that by stuffing the ads inside the stuff they're already watching. So
it's the consumer, it's the circle of media life.
Exactly.
I don't blame anybody for being upset if they suddenly found out that their favorite YouTuber is like taking money to talk about an Xbox One game. I tend to approach it more from like, hey, I'm glad that YouTuber can like pay his rent, right? Or can buy herself dinner. Like, I like people getting paid. I wish you could put up a disclaimer in your video where you're saying, you know, we've been provided this copy from PR and blah, blah, blah. But
yeah. Well, I'll tell you this. I will make this promise to the people listening to this show. From now on, DLC, when we talk about games, I will mention whether or not it was provided to me or Christian or both of us for free. So we'll make that disclaimer. And really, that's the only... I mean, I'm certainly grateful that a company like New Relic is sponsoring the show, and I certainly encourage people to support our show by supporting them. I hope we're not in the situation where we have to compromise, you know, the people we take ads from or the games we cover. But the only way the show is possible is because we are sponsored. And I'm very fortunate that 5x5 has sponsors that are not directly video games themselves. But certainly if we were offered a sponsorship from a video game, it would mean that, you know, we wouldn't talk about the game editorially. So sure. That's the situation we are in. And, I, you know, it's just, you know, I hope people are more transparent about it, but
What I
always think is cool is transparency. And you know who I really like for this is Polygon. Polygon is very upfront about the ethics involved in what they do. In terms of reviews, at least. I'm not gonna go so far as to like talk about anything else. I don't know all of their procedures, but I really like their ethics policy in terms of their reviews. And just transparency is cool, you know?
I just like Ollie exclusively for the PlayStation Vita, where you can challenge yourself to high scores and linking tricks together and landing them well. And also, each level has multiple objectives you have to achieve. Blisteringly frustrating, but oh so rewarding. Ollie, available now from the PlayStation Network exclusively for the Sony Vita, is my favorite game. And that's just what's important about this controversy.
Christian, your voice sounds so smooth and clear. You must have moisturized your vocal cords with Mountain Dew, delicious Mountain Dew. All right, we're going to take a call because I want to hear what people have to say about this. If they feel distrustful of media,
before you go to a call, we didn't talk about the Conan O'Brien thing. Is that different? The kind of content that Conan O'Brien puts together and then getting paid for those placements, is that? Do you guys think that's any different from what YouTubers do?
I think it's very different. Yeah, I mean, it's a comedy sketch, and he's not really expressing his opinion about the game. He just sort of it's this moron who doesn't know anything about games playing games hilariously. Yeah. But I would say that it would be nice if it was labeled as such, because I mean, we used to do the similar things on TRS where we would be ridiculous dudes doing something ridiculous that had to do with the sponsor that we were sponsoring. But we always made it clear, like, hey, this is a sponsored segment. And I think that's an important point to reveal to your audience. Right. Anybody? No?
I agree. All right. I totally agree.
All right. Well, let's take this call. Anonymous is calling. Ooh, Anonymous. What do you think about?
Hi there.
Hi. What are you less trustful of YouTubers in relation to games journalists, or other way around, or even Stevens?
Look, I'm definitely less trustful of some of these YouTubers when it comes to game journalism. But I think, looking at the scheme of things, the majority of game journalists, ways I think I consume my content in terms of game information and reviews and that kind of thing come from trusted websites to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it comes down to the fact that I respect if a website discloses, kind of like how you did with CRS, you would always disclose, like you had Assassin's Creed sponsor the show at one point, but you never reviewed Assassin's Creed on CRS.
Right.
That kind of thing, I think, builds the trustworthiness of your brand. And I think at the end of the day, I can imagine it is very hard to navigate through money and that kind of thing. But the trustworthiness of the brand that you have is really tantamount to sort of stopping you from having a barrage of negative comments and also kind of keeping you afloat.
So when you visit a website, are you paying attention to the individual writer of an article, or is it sort of the website itself has earned your trust?
Well, like I look at a website like Giant Bomb, for instance, and all of those guys, you know, are trustworthy individuals that've been around the block. I kind of can see that as a beacon for the whole website in general. But no, I don't think I go to specific people, but sometimes I do from the perspective of like my gaming taste might match their gaming taste, so I'm more maybe inclined to get their perspective on it. But if it's just a news article, then I don't think that really factors into it.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Now it is time, so apropos, to go to our sponsor, New Relic, because honestly, this show would not be possible without them. And New Relic, if you have a web or mobile application, you definitely need to know about New Relic. New Relic is a developer's best friend because it's easy to use, analytics, dashboard that gives developers powerful code level visibility into the real-time performance of their applications. This means you can spot bugs, see bottlenecks, and fix problems fast before they ever affect your user. Thanks to New Relic, you no longer have to ship an app to production and then helplessly wait around hoping for the best until negative app reviews and tweets start to pour in. New Relic empowers software engineers by showing them what's working and what isn't all in real time. The way it works is really straightforward. New Relic gives developers a lightweight agent that you unpackage into your production-level apps. That agent sits quietly and securely in the background, gathering real-time metrics across geographies, devices, platforms, all the way down to the end-user level, and then displays all that data in real-time graphs so that coders have total visibility into the performance of their web and mobile applications. I actually got a tweet this week from somebody who says he uses New Relic to actually monitor his computer in real-time. He can see the performance of his PC. So that's an interesting way of using New Relic as well. So you can go check out New Relic by visiting newrelic.com. That's newrelic.com/DLC. Remember to put the /DLC at the end to learn more and use the offer code DLC30 to take advantage of a special 30-day extended free pro trial. And it's available exclusively to listeners of DLC. The DLC 30 product code at newrelic.com/DLC. Build better performing apps, get deeper insights, spot bottlenecks quickly, and improve performance with New Relic. And we certainly thank New Relic for sponsoring our show and making our show possible. Okay, so I'm going to talk about my pick. Well, before I talk about my pick, I want to talk about this other kind of nefarious, businessy craziness that's going on this week, which is the Candy Crush devs have actually managed to get a trademark on the word candy, which is completely insane to me. This story absolutely exploded this week because Candy Crush, of course, is this crazy compulsive game, iOS, Android game that people are pouring billions of dollars into for some reason. And there's a plethora of candy-related games that sprung up as copycats. But instead of trademarking Candy Crush, which I'm sure they already have, they decided to break it up and not only trademark candy, the word candy, but also Saga, which is Candy Crush Saga is the full title. I find this to be a frightening precedent, obviously, but I'm glad we have Christian Spicer here, which is the only time you'll hear me say that, because if people may not know, Christian actually went to lawyer in school and became a lawyer in type of dude. So do you have any insight into this thing? Am I silly to even think this is crazy because it happens all the time, or do you have any insight there, Christian?
So, yeah, I should lead this. I'm actually talking about legality. Under the bars of both California and Texas, where I was barred, but both bars are currently set to inactive, any advice I give is not legal advice. I cannot provide legal advice. I am not an attorney. I was. I am no longer. My licenses are inactive. I really need to say that. It sounds dumb. I understand how it's scary as a precedent. Playing devil's advocate, I could see why they would want to try to get this trademarked because, you know, you could create candy slush, right? Something that sounds similar. And of course, you want to protect your brand. Candy Crush is one of the most profitable and most successful handheld or, you know, smartphone games, app games around. And so I understand their desire to get it. The issue now is how they enforce it or whether or not it is enforceable and to what extent. And so having a trademark is one thing, but then proving infringement of it in a court of law is something different. Now, the concern that people have is, oh, well, I'm a small developer or I'm just trying to make an app and I make a game, you know, that has the word candy in it. Now, Candy Crush Saga, who has, you know, all this Scrooge McDuck money piles, are going to sue me and I don't have the money to defend, you know, in court, and they'll just be these bullies because they're so rich and they'll send cease and desist. And who am I to try to, you know, fight this because, you know, legal action is expensive. There's some truth to that, yes, but if they're going around using this trademark in that form as like a bully pulpit to do things, it's going to hurt their brand and it's going to hurt their integrity, and someone will be able to stop them because it's not, at the end of the day, it's not that expensive. But what I do think it does is, if you are developing a game, again, not legal advice, just my personal opinion, why do you need to have candy in it? You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying you shouldn't. You shouldn't be allowed to. You don't have the, you know, the right, quote unquote, to name your game whatever you want. But don't try to make a copycat game that's trying to infringe on that IP. So if your game is wholly different, if you're Candyland, the board game, and you're going to make Candyland the iOS game, make your game. You know, don't worry about it. But I think that's the issue, is that everybody is upset about all these probabilities, hypotheticals, and potential circumstances that might arise. But at the end of the day, in my non-legal opinion, I think this is a story that gets a lot of hot air and then ultimately won't be seen or heard from again.
Yeah, I mean, in the chat room, Ken J. Isalk said it's just a slow news day material. Do you think that that's what it is, Corey? Is it just slow news day material, or is it really kind of indicative of a bigger problem?
I think it's the kind of story where, like, everybody wants to jump on it and talk about it, but the ramifications of it don't play out for a while, right? And unfortunately, very few people who do report on it are lawyers. So it's tough to get into these things. Like, we can get public opinion to discuss, like, whether it makes sense for, oh, Saga is now a trademarked word. What does this mean for a game like the Banner Saga, which, spoilers, is a fantastic game. But I do kind of agree that it's a little of the moment, and it's hard to, it seems a bit like headline chasing. Yeah.
Then let's move on.
Well, just real quick, while we're still here, Jeff, just because, to be as clear as possible, again, while not legal advice. One, if you want to be concerned about IP law problems, be concerned about how the Disney change and how they're trying to extend copyright to last even longer, because I think, in my opinion, that's what hurts intellectual property discovery and growth the most. And the other thing that you should be concerned about is software patents, because that is creating patent trolls and creating expensive stuff for end users and the software side of things, and you have companies buying up patents, and it's a mess. Write your congressman about that. But about trademark, you can read the USC Uniform Commercial Code if you want. It's in Article 15. And basically, the gist of it is, the last element of proving and winning a trademark claim is that you need to prove the defendant's use of the mark causes likelihood of confusion. So that's the key, right? They have the first two here for sure. They have a protectable mark, and they own the mark. That's been registered. That's proven. That's kind of easy to do. But what you need to prove then is that it causes confusion in the marketplace. And that's always the issue of the case. And if you have a completely different
game, can I just say, you're out of order. We're all out of order. If I was the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place. Can I just do that? That's how the law system
works.
Can you
keep going? That's fantastic.
I'm pretty sure that's how the law system. I'm pretty sure.
I guess to put this into terms that we can maybe talk a little bit more about, like, should it scare anybody off who's making a game that might include candy? If a big indie developer was going to make a PC or a Steam game that was called, like, you know, Candy Massacre 14. Like, should they be scared of making that game, or should they? I mean, they should probably come up with a better name, because they shouldn't use anything I come up with. But like,
well, I mean, I think they should judge.
How terrifying is this for a small developer?
They should judge it based on the success of Candy Massacre 1 through 13. Or, you know, but I think that's really more.
Well, it's like Final Fantasy. They take place in different worlds, and they iterate on the systems every year.
Right. I mean, I think this topic is, which is why it wasn't actually my story of the week.
You couldn't handle the truth.
I couldn't handle the truth. My actual story of the week, which is undeniable, and you guys are both so wrong because you didn't pick this one. It is that Hearthstone went into open beta this week. Thank you very much. Clap, clap, clap. The world is a better place because people can play.
Yeah, I want to recant and say that I agree with Jeff.
Yes!
This is the most important story.
No, open beta? Listen to you guys.
Yes!
Just wait for the game to come out.
I have an argument, though. I have an argument for why this is important, right? And it's related to what you just said. Like, Blizzard has put out Hearthstone in an open beta where anybody can jump in and play. You can also pay for cards. Does this count as an actual release? Go.
Oh, man.
Right?
It's so complicated now. And honestly, I think that's a great transition to a big story that I wanted to talk about here, which, you know, we have you on, Corey. You're a PC gamer. I want to talk a lot about PC gaming in this episode. And I think one of the really interesting things that seems to be happening in the last couple of months is this new form of PC gaming that has come about, where the early access on Steam and these games that, and Minecraft even, these games that are, and Dota is the same way, these games that are playable and are games and have huge followings and are making lots of money and aren't really even officially out, but they are.
And aren't even finished.
Right. And there's this great editorial on Polygon about the idea of what is a finishable game and what is a finished game. And is this a new paradigm of just sort of games that go on and on? The op-ed on Polygon, and you guys should definitely check it out. I wish I had written down who wrote it. I apologize for that. But it talks about the idea of games that aren't finishable, i.e. there's no end screen, relating to games also that aren't ever quite finished, that they keep adding content to. And as people that review games, I mean, how do you even approach stuff like that where, for example, you know, there was a review of World of Warcraft that came out, you know, 7 years ago. Is that still even valid? You know, like what world are we living in? Is this, are you welcoming? I know you're a guy that plays a lot of early access stuff, Corey. What do you think?
So it is an interesting question, both from a like game journalism standpoint and just kind of a consumer, like I like to play games standpoint. And so I probably have different answers on the two of those. Which one would you like to hear first?
Well, let's go with the game journalist version, because I'm curious what the
standard
is.
You went with the hard one.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay. So PC Gamer for a while now has done what we call alpha reviews, where we review a game and instead of giving it a score, we're kind of like basically just judging, is this game worth paying for now or should you wait? And most of the time the answer to that is kind of mixed. Like there are big chunks of a game that are not there, and so, well, you're probably not going to get out of this exactly what you want. In some cases it does make sense. We gave Rust a kind of like, yeah, go ahead and buy it now kind of a review. And Rust, for those who don't know, is an indie game from the creators of Garry's Mod that you can get on Steam, and it's kind of a survivalist Minecraft meets DayZ or zombie apocalypse feel. And it's a game that's very much early access, right? There are bugs, there are things that are missing, but you can jump into it and have a good time now. So where's the line for that? It's kind of tough to say. We're treating it on a case-by-case basis. And we're also doing, you know, columns that kind of round up some of these games. Some games are good at this state. DayZ is a really interesting game right now, even though it is fundamentally broken. And you know, Bohemia Interactive and Dean Hall would tell you that the game is not really ready. They put up lots of disclaimers and say don't buy this, but it's sold over 1 million copies. Starbound is a lot of fun right now, even though it's early access. And some games are just so broken that you can hardly play them.
Mm-hmm.
So from a criticism standpoint, that's a really tough line to draw.
So personally, how do you feel about it?
From a game playing standpoint, yeah, like as a consumer, it's a terrifying thought to me that most of the games that are big and popular on Steam right now are not finished. And are not kind of production quality, right? That people will spend $30 on DayZ and not really know when it's going to be finished. Like from a consumer standpoint, that's a scary precedent to set. And it kind of ties into some of my feelings with Kickstarter and paying for games before you even really know how they're going to turn out. But I also haven't been that burned.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've had really interesting experiences in DayZ, and a lot of them were because, you know, I fell through the geometry of the world and got to see what happens when a zombie gets trapped in like the floor with me and like eventually eats my face.
Let me just say that article was written by Rowan Kaiser on Polygon, so you should check that out.
Right.
Sorry, go ahead, Corey.
No, it's tough. You have to kind of hope that consumers at some point will judge whether they're going to get their money's worth out of something or not. And like in DayZ's case, the mod was so popular that I think a lot of people knew about it or had heard enough buzz about the game that they were willing to experiment with it. Mm. And I hope that game gets finished and is in a playable state and everybody feels good about the $30 that they spent. There are obviously lots of people who don't. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not giving you a very clear answer. It's just all so tough.
Yeah, I guess
it's the future of PC gaming, and I wonder at what point it's going to come over to consoles.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think that's really a big separator right now between what it is, what the experience is like as a gamer on PC versus console, and you have this certification process that happens on consoles. You know, obviously we've seen games like Battlefield 4 and others that, and Skyrim, that pass the certification process and end up being broken anyway, which is something to be really chagrined about. But
right,
generally speaking, you're having a more protected sort of finished experience on the consoles. But I think that PC gamers as a community that builds their own and likes to get into the nuts and bolts of stuff finds joy in having that behind the curtain view of games. Christian, what do you think?
It's kind of a community development thing too.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, absolutely it is.
You know, and you're more engaged when you feel like you're a part of the beta process, I guess.
Yeah, and talk about Rust and that announcement that they made that, you know, Gary's Mod has been a big deal for what, 10 years? And yet they made more on Rust in their first week than they ever made on Gary's Mod. It's like, this is a very successful marketing strategy as well as getting people into the games early. Christian, hit me up with your take.
Yeah, well, I think the big issue is what was just brought up, where there's no guarantee the game will ever come out, right? When you're that, and again, it kind of goes back to the YouTube and Machinima thing, where if you go into this type of thing, you need to go in eyes wide open. When Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise were still a couple and were starring in movies together,
Eyes wide shut.
I know. You need to go in. aware of what you're getting into and knowing that this is the money you're spending. If the game does come out, then you'll get, oftentimes you're getting it at a, you know, discount of what the full release, eventual release will be. But there's no guarantee that this game will ever be finished or ever get to a quote unquote boxed retail gone gold version. And I think to some extent, as much, Jeff, you and I have joked about, like, you know, we did a thing on and Double Jump about it, and we've talked about it offline before too, you know, joking around about user reviews and how sometimes they're utterly worthless. I do think that in a gaming community, oftentimes for this early access stuff, you can learn a lot from what other people are saying. And, you know, whether it's the official developer message board or GAF or just even the user reviews and Steam, you know, checking out what the game is right now, whether or not it's worth spending your money. I don't think you should ever buy early access for what you hope the game will become. I think you decide, I'm spending $30 right now to get this product. If it stays this product forever, is that money well spent to me? And if you do that, then I think you're okay.
But what about this idea of these games that constantly evolve? I mean, there's definitely a view that this is a really exciting state to be in. I mean, if you look at the community for Minecraft, part of what those kids dig about that game is that, oh my gosh, this week now there's a red dragon scale at the bottom of the lava pit and we have to find it. And now there's Spelunky is the same way. Like, now there's this thing that's in the game. And now, you know, there's this secret, new secrets that are always popping up and it's alive. It's a gaming world that's constantly evolving and alive, and there's new things to do around every week. That's kind of a exciting thing that feels like the next step in what games can be. I mean, it really takes the MMO idea and makes it into all kinds of games, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it changes the nature of what we think of as a product in a video game sense.
Yeah.
Like, you're not just paying for a license to run this software on your computer. You're paying for the experience of, like, all the other people who are going to make this game cool with you, right? Mm-hmm. Which that's been around since MMOs started.
Yeah.
But you see that happen even more in these smaller indie games that are going early access, or in something like Hearthstone, where Let's be honest. This is a release for Hearthstone. I don't think this is. You can call this open beta all you want. I was in the closed beta for Hearthstone and I loved it and put in money for it.
Yeah, me
like,
too.
That felt like a finished product to me. And that's going. The mechanics of that game are going to evolve and they're going to add more things. But you know,
yeah, and that's
a product release. It's not the same as like these games that are like Minecraft was so bare bones when you could first buy it. But there was so much potential that people wanted to buy in.
Yeah. And for a game like Hearthstone that's free to play anyway, there's never going to be a boxed version on a store shelf somewhere. There's no reason for them to ever come out of beta. I mean, it's just constantly changing. And they'll add new cards and they'll take away cards and they'll balance things. And when, you know, the barbarian is overpowered, then they'll nerf it. And then it's just going to be a constantly evolving ecosystem, which is kind of cool, I think. Let's find out what the callers think. I have a guy who's been on hold an hour now from 903. Yes. What do you think about this idea of being a game that is not ever done? Are you hip to that? Do you think that's exciting or is that a step backward?
Well, it really depends. I mean, from my life and what I've got going on at the moment, games that are kind of perpetual don't really serve as much of a purpose in, with my schedule being what it is. I just don't have time to kind of invest in a game like that. But I definitely see the value proposition for people who, you know, I mean, for the money, what you get out of Minecraft is pretty amazing. And I get why people would want to see it continue to grow and evolve over time. And for the little you invest in it, it's pretty awesome. But I find myself not really gravitating towards those kind of experiences. And like you said, it's very much an issue of if it never is finished and you're kind of getting in on the ground floor with this very incomplete experience, it's just, I don't know. I try to be tolerant about it because I know it's just because I'm not into it doesn't mean that there aren't plenty of people where that's precisely what they're wanting. But yeah, just for me, it just doesn't make a lot of sense typically.
Yeah. I think that that Polygon op-ed that I referenced makes an interesting point as well, is that a lot of the people who are quote unquote hardcore gamers or game reviewers or like to position themselves as being abreast on everything that's happening in the world of gaming tend to be the people that like to consume something, finish it, and move forward. And yet there's this whole other swath of really passionate gamers that are playing things like Dota and League of Legends and Minecraft over and over and over, and they become real singularly minded on the kinds of games they play. There was a story just this week that League of Legends is banking 27 million players. What was it? A week, a day or something, a day. It might've been a day. But it's just, those people are pouring hundreds and hundreds of hours into these singular experiences that will never finish, that don't have a game over screen. Don't have a, you know, you've done all there is to do in this game screen. But as this caller pointed out, you know, that is a real paradigm shift from the people that sort of grew up buying something, playing it to the end, finishing that, or, you know, the term that I always dislike, beating the game. There's no beating games anymore, you know, for a lot of these new kinds of experiences.
The games where there are, like, isn't it so fascinating that video gaming as an industry and as a hobby is so wide that we can have, you know, our cake and eat it too. You can have games that you can finish and get a complete narrative out of, and you can have games that just perpetually move on, or like, you know, sports like Dota and League of Legends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say there's always kind of been games like that. We're seeing advancements in them, in the style. But, you know, like, yeah, you know, Donkey Kong or Pac-Man had kill screens or whatever. But you were playing that not to complete the story arc. And then there are always games like, you know, NBA Jam and NFL Blitz that, you know, like, there were electronic versions of sport games, but that didn't have an end. Or Madden, you know, you never beat or finish Madden. We're just seeing that expanded to, I think, like, Dota falls into that, competitive gaming. And then you're seeing these other, you know, it's expanding, it's creating new genres, but not doing anything radically new, right? It's taking what you guys talked about, the MMO perspective, and shifting it into maybe a little bit more of a single player game. But yeah, we haven't gotten rid of the single player story. Jeff, what I wanted to ask you, do you think, like, reviewing this kind of stuff could maybe fall in line with the difference between reviewing a film versus episode 201 of How I Met Your Mother, right? Like a TV show that necessarily has no end. And maybe the thing is you review or provide your insight on the new change or this week's thing.
No, I think that's a great comparison.
That makes
because
sense?
Yeah, no, for sure. You know, we ran into that a lot during TRS days as well, when we would, you know, review the pilot of a TV show, and oftentimes the least representative episode of a show is the pilot, because it's trying to do things that the show itself never has to do, which is sort of introduce every character and, you know, tell you the plot of the story, of the premise of the concept. But yeah, I mean, I think that that's kind of how it'll be. It'll be like, you know, yeah, oh, Buffy the Vampire Slayer is a great show, but don't watch the first season. You know, it's that kind of thing. It's like, you know, these games are amazing. You just, you know, had to wait for 4 months before it got amazing. So that's, you know, I think that's a great comparison.
And along those same lines, like if you were an early adopter of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you know, you could say you were there when Willow was dressing up in the Sears dress, right?
Yeah.
But you probably never want to go back to those days. Like if you were there at the beginning of Minecraft and you remember just how bare bones it was, and you're sitting there now in like the Nether Realm, like you never want to go back.
Yeah. Speaking of old games though, Corey, I need you to tell me about Might and Magic Legacy X, because back in the day I was a huge Might and Magic. I was a huge fan of Might and Magic, as well as Bard's Tale and all those sort of Ultima Underworld, all those grid-based first-person role-playing games.
Right.
I have not had a chance to play Legacy X yet, but tell me, should I be?
This is an interesting segue, too, because Legacy was an early access game where people were playing chunks of it at a time, right? Mm-hmm. You know, only Act 1 would be available at one point, or only Act 2. And it was one of the few kind of narrative based games that was like that. Now it's out. Here's my question for you, Jeff. When you said you played Might and Magic, were you playing Might and Magic 6 or were you playing World of Zine?
Oh, I never played World of Zine. I mean, I played Might and Magic like 1, 2, 3, you know,
right.
And that's my question is like, is my nostalgia for that style better than the reality of it now? You know,
I have nostalgia for that as well, and I love this game kind of desperately right now. I played it for like 10 hours over the weekend, like kind of just got like a marathon day of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that style. I was also a big fan of Legend of Grimrock from I think a couple years ago,
right.
That was very much based off of Dungeon Master,
yeah.
Where you have a party of four adventurers and you're interacting with the world in a first person perspective and moving one grid at a time. And there's like, they have like the graph paper map, like old school D&D. And I think that's only going to appeal to a certain set of gamers. But if you can get past the hump of this idea that like, you cannot just run through the world willy nilly, like you have to follow these grids and that plays into the positioning of your combat, then there's a lot of really great and actually kind of fresh gameplay here. Like it's not as constraining or as hard as some older RPGs used to be in the PC space.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of kind of linear leveling for your characters. You always feel like you have a lot of skill points and you're not just, you know, building your character so he can only use swords. Like you can spread out a bit. Lots of interesting monsters. It's using the Unity engine, and at first it took me a while to figure out how to make the Unity engine look good. But after I cranked up all the settings, it looks pretty good. It's not like Skyrim with huge mods on it or anything, but it's a good looking game, and I'm really into it so far. It's not a narrative behemoth. you're not going to get the most amazing story out of this.
Yeah,
but I'm sucked into the world.
Are there puzzles?
It's no
and
Gears
stuff?
Of War.
It's no Gears of War. Are there puzzles and stuff, or is it?
You know, it's actually mostly combat.
Yeah,
you have some quests where like you need to go to this one area and find out what happened. And then that's going to end up turning more into combat than it is like, you know, I need to solve a match 3 puzzle. I'm in an area right now, that's focused a lot on levers in a castle.
Mm-hmm.
You have to throw the right levers and then figure out what doors it opened. That kind of old school feel.
Yeah.
I'd say it's probably about 70% combat.
That's cool. And is the combat exciting? I mean, it's all turn-based, right? It's all what kind of options, right? Do you have like fight, defend, magic, or is it more intense than that?
No, you have it's So your party typically gets to go first, and they go from left to right, but you can choose what character wants to go. And it's mostly like your fighters are going to have some special attacks or just straight up attack or defend. And your magic users or your rangers will have like ranged options or spells. And then the monsters get to go. And you might have like four monsters on a tile in front of you. And so they'll all beat the crap out of you. And then you have to kind of go back and make sure that you're not dead. The tricky part of it is that when you get into melee range with a monster or a group of monsters, you can't back out. There's no running away. So once you get locked in, like you're there to the bitter end of the fight. And in a lot of cases, that means that my party gets murdered and I have to relive. But it's not a streamlined combat system in the sense of, you know, even something Final Fantasy like, where like, you know, you're going to get your go and you have lots of options. Like sometimes you were just going to get beat up so hard that all you can do is try to rely on magic, on potions to refresh your health, and you're probably going to die. It's open world in the sense that I could run to an area where the monsters are way over my level and I won't know it, which has happened to me a couple of times. But it's not old school in the way that it doesn't make any sense or feels cheap. It just feels like this is that older style of here are the options that are presented to me.
What I'm curious about with this type of game and people live, I don't know if you can call in or in the chat or if you're listening, you know, tweet at us or email us. And then for you, Jeff, because you mentioned this kind of, I wonder if this type of game is attracting new/younger gamers, or if this type of game, while not exactly a throwback to 1, 2, 3, and 4, will die out as we all grow older, people that grew up with them. Because I hear a lot of people say things like you did, Jeff, where, oh man, I played the crap out of these before. I mean, I haven't touched this one. Should I? And is there a market where these games are attracting the, you know, the 10-year-old or the age that you were and I was when we first played, you know, the first one of these games? Or is it just for gamers in their 30s that used to like them?
Well, I think there's
feels awful nostalgic.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that happening.
I think this is a tough sell for someone who's never played a game like this.
Mm. But it's interesting that we're getting a lot of that in the indie space, and with the way games are distributed now, you're getting a lot of these games that are throwbacks that are, you know, and the audience that grew up with games can have these old experiences that are throwbacks, that are nostalgic, and I think there's room for that, and there'll be, I mean, when you know, in 20 more years, there's going to be throwback games of like, oh, look, this game that came out, that's like a God of War type of a game. We don't have those anymore. Right. You know, it'll always
remember those Assassin's Creed type of games. Here's a throwback for you, and it's going to have like pixelized retro graphics.
Exactly.
Oh, look, it has HD graphics. Oh man.
But I we're at a stage in the industry where like, there's not only is there that nostalgic market, but you can also make these games easier than they were. Like, I have a feeling the old Might and Magic games, the first person games, were way tougher than this.
Oh, yeah.
If I went to like good old games and bought World of Xene and tried to play it, I'd be a wreck. There's no way I'd be able to keep up with it.
Yeah.
I've gotten soft in my old age.
I don't know how if it's more a product of me being a kid and not really understanding stuff, but I definitely put tens of hours into these games, and I probably saw a fourth of Might and Magic 3, for example. I remember playing Might and Magic 3 for hours and hours and hours, and I like stayed in the first town and just, you know, because you'd have random monster encounters and you just walk around, and I just wasn't sophisticated enough to even get what was happening, you know. And Bard's Tale is the same way. The first Bard's Tale, my friend and I stayed in Scarab Bray, which is the very first town you go into in that game. For hours.
Look, we get this game and all these other discs to use as coasters.
Yeah.
This is the best game ever.
We'd go and we get into a fight, and one of our dudes would get hurt, and we'd be like, well, we better go back and visit the healer. You know, it's like, no, the guy just got a couple of hit points taken off. We didn't understand. We were kids.
That's totally in this too. If your character dies, you have to find the nearest town to like have the healers resurrect him or her. And I've instead of doing that, I just reload. And so I'll end up in that kind of like reload feedback loop of like, well, okay, I got into this fight and three of my characters died. I guess I better start over. And I've blown 3 hours on that probably.
How do you feel about that? I mean, games like XCOM and even Civilization and certain games that allow you to save at any time, I can sort of get into that perfectionist loop thing. Do you think that is better or do you think that takes away from the experience?
It hurts me. Yeah. I think you and I have talked about this on a Gamers with Jobs conference call episode.
Yeah. Jeff,
where like I hit a point in Dishonored where I couldn't keep going because I would go into an encounter and try to stealth my way through it and couldn't. And so I would reload.
Right.
And I would just like I'm beating my head against the wall trying to make this encounter move perfectly instead of just like rolling with it.
Yeah.
And I encounter that in a lot of games.
I do too. And even games that don't allow me to save anywhere, sometimes if there's a checkpoint right before something, and I, even in shooters where I'll go a specific direction and I'll get slaughtered, And then instead of trying a different direction, I'll just keep hitting my head against that same wall. Like, I should be able to get through this way. And I'll just keep doing it and doing it until it's perfect. And I'll, you know, like, oh, I messed that up. I'm just going to die on purpose. I didn't want to use that grenade there.
It's that feeling that it's your it's not the game letting you down. It's just your skill.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I can do this better. Come on.
Indeed.
I can make this work.
And I think that's the key. And it's how the game sets up those expectations, right? Because there's games like Heavy Rain where, you know, Jeff, you and I both, and the game was pitched this way. It's like, no, have your experience, let stuff happen. And part of it is because there's very few game over screens, but it lets you roll with that. And I think sometimes, yeah, you thinking that you messed up versus this is my experience is the paradigm shift that needs to happen with gamers. Because if you think you can pull it off, then you're going to keep trying to pull it off. Versus this is what happened to my character. Now let's get out of this mess. But it also happens with sports games where it's like, you know, like I have a friend who grew up in Cleveland and always plays Madden as the Browns. And it's just,
just a glutton for punishment.
Right.
I mean, just being a Cleveland fan is a glutton for punishment right there.
Oh.
Yeah, it's true. Unfortunately, I'm sorry to all the Browns fans out there.
Let's see if we can get through a couple of quick calls here. I got guys that have been on hold for a long time. Before we get, I want to hear what you've been playing this week, Christian. But first of all, we got a guy from 479. Any games you've been playing this week? What have you been enjoying video game or tabletop wise?
Well, somebody tweeted, I think it was just a couple of days ago. What do you guys like best about Dark Souls? Mm. And I got to say, the thing I like best about Dark Souls is that I don't have to play it. I can watch Patrick Clifford and Jeffrey do it on Twitch. I've been watching a lot of that, and I've been playing a heck of a lot of Spelunky. I know it's been out a while. It's kind of old news now, but the kind of resurgence that it's had, at least in my sphere, with watching Clifford play it,
So are you playing it yourself or are you watching other people play it?
Well, Dark Souls, I'm not touching it. I know it's fantastic. It's an amazing game, but I just can't be bothered. But Spelunky, most definitely. Watching kind of the back and forth that Clevick's had with Chris Remo.
Right.
It kind of just inspired me to start playing it. I think it's, you kind of have to be in the right mindset for that game, though, don't you? You kind of have to just admit, I am going to suck at this really badly for a long time. And
that's pretty much how I approach life.
You can get into that mindset where you... Yeah, that's sad, man.
Well, you know, just keep at it.
Show. We
keep
can.
At it.
No, but you know, you have to get in that mindset where it's almost, it's kind of, I don't know, zen is probably kind of a stupid word to use, but you're like, you know, I'm going to learn something every single time. And, you know, with all these guys, or at least a couple of guys playing it on Twitch, it kind of becomes a back and forth, even without really interacting with them. You know, you learn something every time you watch and every time you play. And to me, that's what I enjoy about games.
That's a great call. I mean, that's certainly the experience that I had playing Rogue Legacy. And I love that sentiment. I mean, I sort of flippantly said it's how I approach life, but it really is. You know, if you can learn something each time and you keep getting back on the horse and giving it another shot, there's something beautiful about that.
Yeah, don't ride horses.
Right, beautiful about that. And the other part of your call that I find so fascinating is something I have a hard time relating to. I don't understand the idea of watching someone else play a game that you have no interest in playing yourself. Do you guys get that?
Oh, I do, yeah.
Yeah?
Absolutely. I have tried to learn how to play Europa Universalis 4, which is a grand strategy game from Paradox. And I just cannot wrap my head around it, but I can watch people play it, watch the decisions that they make, and I find it fascinating. I also don't play a lot of MOBAs. I don't play Dota or League of Legends, but I like watching people play League of Legends.
Right.
Because then you don't have my my suckitude hindering anyone from enjoying the experience, right?
Yeah.
I think watching people play games is becoming this huge thing simply because there's less investment involved, right? If you sit down and try to play Dark Souls and you cannot get comfortable with the fact that you are going to die, you are going to lose those 10,000 souls that you just got. Like, watching someone else play it will help you see what's cool about that game, even if it's not something that you have the patience for. PC Gamer chose Spelunky as their game of the year because of that experience of watching people do the daily challenges and seeing how far they could get, and also because it's just a fantastic game.
Yeah. Christian, do you ever watch people play a game that you have no interest in playing?
Only competitive games.
Yeah.
And, it's not that I don't, I guess it's splitting hairs. It's not that I don't have an interest in playing Dota or League or, you know, diving back into Street Fighter. I don't have the time to be good at them. I'm very interested in them and would love to play them, but I can't. But that type of, I mean, I can. I choose not to make the time because of other commitments I already have in my life,
yeah,
for being honest. But I find that type of game fascinating to watch. Narrative games like a Dark Souls, or like, you know, some people watch The Last of Us, you know, YouTube video for me, or watch people play that. For me, that I would rather watch. I'd rather play the game or watch an actual movie. But I think, I hate the name esports, but I think competitive video games can be just as fascinating to watch as, you know, the Super Bowl or sports.
Yeah, seeing something done at a high level is always compelling, especially when you understand what it takes to be playing at that high level.
Yes.
Yeah. So the Gru in the chat room asked, what kind of game do we wish we played but don't? And for me, that's pretty simple. It's MOBAs. I wish I had the room in my schedule to actually get really good at them. I envy that time commitment that I just am not able to put in. But I want to be. When I was in college, I got really, really good at art. Well, not really, really good, but for me, good at RTS games. You know, I played a crap ton of StarCraft and Warcraft 2 and 3. And we got to a point where we had a lot of fun because we were competitive at it. We were actually could hop in and be competitive. And I never got that way with FPS, you know, multiplayer games. But I envy people that have the time to do it with MOBAs. I just wish I could make that jump. You guys have a genre like that?
I love games. And I don't know if I wish that I could do this per se, because again, I probably could, but I admire the gamers that have a game. And whether it's Call of Duty, you know, they buy Call of Duty and that's all they play and they genuinely love it and they get so deep into that culture and they know it ends out of the maps, or Dota players, you know, they have their characters or they're so into it they can randomize and they stick to their lane. I love that. I am just too much of a moth to a flame when I'm like, ooh, new shiny.
Yeah, I am too, man. Cult of the new.
I really wish I could. I committed to my wife and my kid, and maybe that's all the commitment I had in my life.
I'm the same way. And I'll go even one step further and say that I wish I could play Dota 2. It's such a learning curve for that game, but watching someone who's good at it play it, like, it's hard not to look at it and go, man, what a fantastic game.
True.
So I keep saying someday, but let's be honest, something new and shiny will distract me.
Well, speaking of new and shiny, I think it's tabletop time. Tabletop time! And that means I get to read an email this week, because this email was directly about tabletop time. Tabletop time! It was sent in to dlcfeedback@gmail.com, which you can do as well. And it says, hey guys, Matt from Alberta, Canada here. I was hoping to get some help from Jeff in regards to tabletop games. I've always wanted to try out Dungeons & Dragons, but I've never successfully convinced more than one person to play it with me. Sad, I know. Is there any similar style games that two people can play and still have a good time? Well, Matt from Alberta, Canada, you're in luck, because there's a ton. This is a huge genre of board games. And the easiest ones to recommend are the ones, if you're interested in a Dungeons & Dragons-like experience, is the ones that Wizards of the Coast make themselves. The Dungeons & Dragons people make a series of board games. Dungeons & Dragons There's three, I think, that have come out so far. Castle Ravenloft, Legend of Drizzt, which is D-R-I-Z-Z-T, and Wrath of Ashardalon. And all of these are designed to give you a Dungeons & Dragons type experience where the game itself plays as the judge or the dungeon master. So basically there's a rule set that is in place for what you do on each turn to move the monsters around and to have the monsters battle you, and how you explore. You'll lay down a new tile when you walk into a new area so that the game is different every single time, so you're not playing on a static board. And they're really fun. I've played, I haven't played Wrath of Ashardalon, but I played the first two, and both are excellent. They have really cool leveling mechanics that let you level up your guys. They're based on the Dungeons & Dragons 4.0 rule set, and they have really cool powers for all the different classes that you can play as, and they have great components. The miniatures in these games right. are really, really high level, beautiful. They're not painted, but they're monochrome, but they are just spectacular. And some gigantic ones, some little ones, and lots of variety in the box. It sounds like you've played those, Corey, have you?
I have. And if I remember correctly, I don't know if we ever did this in our group, but you can mix and match the games. Like if you have all three, you can start putting them together in a really cool way too. So like for one adventure you're in Castle Ravenloft, or like you can mix monsters into some of the other scenarios.
That's super rad. I haven't even tried that. That's really cool.
I'm pretty sure you can do that. They wanted to build those to be kind of modular, but it's a great introduction to Dungeons and Dragons. There are going to be some people who are like 4.0. No, thank you. But yeah. it makes for a better board game. And you're absolutely right about the pieces. Some of those figures are just fantastic. If you could paint them, or if you took the time to paint those plastic minis, they'd be really cool up on your nerd shelf.
Oh yeah, for sure.
That's awesome.
And there's a whole bunch of games I could list off. I'll just name a couple of others that aren't directly Dungeons and Dragons games. We reviewed a game on TRS called Dungeon Run. That's a plaid hat game. That is really fun. It's sort of a co-op / competitive. We used to call them co-op repetitive. So you're fighting against an engine, but then at the end you have to turn on each other, and there's only one winner, which is a really fun mechanic. It's a really great game. And then Tasty Minstrel put out a really inexpensive micro game that I talked about on Newest Latest Best called Dungeon Roll, which is it's really fun. It's inexpensive. It's basically a push your luck game. Built around going into a dungeon and having monsters. The knock on it that a lot of people have said is that it's basically solitaire for multiple people, but that sounds like what this person wants, what Matt from Alberta, Canada would like, is a way to play solitaire Dungeons & Dragons, and it works great by yourself. If you add you can add multiple people, but when you do, it's sort of like each person's turn is a solitaire game, and it's like, okay, I finished mine, you go. But it's got a really...
It has that cool mechanic where, like, the person to your left of you is, like, controlling the monsters, too.
Kind of, yeah. Like, I mean, ostensibly, they are in control of those dice, but it's still basically you're... They have very little to do, honestly. But it's still a really cool little package and inexpensive. And then I'll mention a couple of other games that I have yet to play but really want to because I've heard such good things about them. The first is what a lot of people are calling the best game of 2013, and I'm dying... Honestly, in a couple of episodes, you'll hear me talk about it because I'm going to buy it very soon. And that's the Pathfinder Adventure Card Game, which is based on the Pathfinder system, which is Paizo, is a company that basically got the rights to a modified version of the 3.5 Dungeons & Dragons rule set, and then put out their own sort of version of a D20 rule set that's based, a lot of people call it Dungeons & Dragons 3.75 because it's kind of halfway between 3.5 and 4. And it's really fun. I've DM'd a Pathfinder game. But this is a board game version that has a really, really innovative and interesting card mechanic that allows the game to be played without having to have a dungeon master. And I've heard just spectacular things about it, and I'm dying to get my hands on it. And then the other one is a game called Super Dungeon Explorer, which is also a recent release that I've heard really good things about. So you have many, many, many options as far as getting a Dungeons & Dragons type experience without having to recruit a ton of friends to play it.
Well, with that, Jeff, I mean, this question comes up a lot. And, you know, I imagine you get asked it more often than I do. But what I think is important to stress, and I don't know, you know, your particular community might be more limited. But look, you know, there are, if you are into this game and want to play these games, there, chances are there are other people that are as into it. And scheduling can be difficult, but, you know, reach out to your community. I know here in Los Angeles at Meltdown Comics, they do, you know, D&D get-togethers, and things like PAX are great for, you know, getting people together, or, you know, conventions. But oftentimes, if you put in a little bit of work, you can find your comic book shop a place. Oh, man, I'm blanking on the name. It's like the Villain's Lair, I think. I'll get it for next week. In San Diego just opened, and they host tons of, Magic, the Gathering, and board games. And put in a little time and look around, and it might just be a home, you know, like someone's house that puts these events together. In San Diego, there was a great Street Fighter tournament that just started in a guy's garage and now is
huge. You actually punch people in the face? I don't think you're supposed to talk about Fight Club, dude. The first rule, I'm pretty sure the first rule is that you don't talk about that.
Well, we're in the street. It's street fighting, and, you know, it's Street Fighter 1, so you only be one character. but look into it, you know, try, and I think that you'd be surprised with the people in your town that might also share this interest. Or if not, be the dude that starts it. You know, how cool could that be, that you get this going from the ground up? And
yeah,
I know it takes work, but it's worth it.
One of the things I did not too long ago was venture onto Yahoo Groups. And there are board gaming groups in every town, pretty much. And I just kind of randomly showed up at one and met some really cool people and had a great time. So yeah, there's lots of ways to hook up with people that have similar interests. But as you said, a great way is to support your local board game store if you can find one. Corey, do you have any board games that you've been enjoying recently?
Oh man, I haven't played a lot of board games in a while. I was gonna throw out Mice and Mystics as another.
Oh, I haven't played that either. That's another Plaid Hat release that's got a lot of positive buzz.
Right. And what's really cool about Mice and Mystics, it feels a little bit like things like Castle Ravenloft or the Super Dungeon Explorer, but the narrative is so great because you're playing as a group of like mice adventurers who are, you know, crawling through a house or like trying to avoid giant spiders or the cat. And it's built more around having that narrative experience than it is just like, let's go do a dungeon crawl.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic mechanics. I recommend it to everybody.
Yeah,
but in terms of like new board games, I'm so behind on the hotness.
Yeah.
Honestly, I just talked some friends last weekend in Portland into not playing Arkham Horror, instead playing Lords of Waterdeep.
Lords of Waterdeep,
which felt like
awesome.
A win to me.
That's another
I
game.
Love Lords of Waterdeep. I haven't even tried the expansion yet, though.
Oh, neither have I. I only own the base game, but that's another game that's published by Wizards of the Coast. It uses the Dungeons and Dragons license, but it's very different. It's kind of that Euro style game with a mask behind. Yeah, masked behind the cool theme of Dungeons and Dragons.
So no, unfortunately, I'm pretty behind on my board games.
Well,
that's about the newest stuff I've played.
That's still very cool stuff. And next week, actually, we're going to be, I think, if everything works out well, the next week is we might have Tom Vassell on from the Dice Tower Network, who is pretty much the world's leading authority on board games. So I'm hoping that works. He's may be having a child between now and then. So if that happens, he will not be on. But I'm very excited. It will be a very tabletop heavy show, which should be fun. Let's take one more call. Let's see what somebody's been on hold quite a while now. From the 720. What did you want to talk about? You got on the line 42 minutes ago. What did you want to talk about?
PJ, thanks for taking my call. It's easy staying on hold. You get to listen to the whole show anyway, so it's not such a good deal.
That's a good thing to point out. Anybody that wants to call in, they should hang out by calling 512-518-5714 every Monday at 11 a.m. You can hang out and listen to the show that way, and then when I finally get to you, you've been listening. All right, I'm sorry. Go ahead. What did you want to talk about?
No, so in terms of board games, actually, my wife and I's first anniversary is coming up here in 2 weeks.
Congratulations.
And so the first anniversary is supposed to be, thank you, is supposed to be paper. So I decided to maybe go with some board games that would be good for, you know, two players and easy to get into. So I decided to give a shot with Carcassonne.
Yeah, that's great.
And Formula B.
Fantastic, yeah.
So I'm hoping those turn out good.
I'd suggest also adding Twister.
Set myself up for a great anniversary gift from here on out. or just totally bomb, you know, she will have to expect a great gift from me forever. So
does she play board games already, or this year to your first salvo into trying to get her to game with you?
This is kind of the first try. We'll see how this goes. We played Munchkin a couple times before, and that's always been fun.
Oh, that's good. Well, Munchkin's a tough game to play with a spouse because it's kind of a take that game. It's you're basically screwing
people
over.
It's a relationship breaker.
Yeah. Well, hey, first year of marriage is the hardest, right? So it's just a smooth sailing from here on out. So we should be good.
Well, congratulations. Does
your wife like card games?
Sorry?
Does your wife like card games?
Oop, I think...
I think I lost him.
No, we got him back. Does your wife like card games?
I hate
what he asked.
Oh, yeah. Yes, she does.
I would recommend Summoner Wars. I hate that I'm mentioning all the Plaid Hat games here, but Summoner Wars is a really cool two-player Magic the Gathering meets chess kind of game, but it's really more of a beer and pretzels game. You can get through it in about an hour or so. And that's a really great gateway into some other deeper games.
Yeah, my go-to has always been Renner Knizia games. They tend to be really great introductory games because they're not too heavy on theme, but the mechanics are always really fun. So I always recommend for two players, especially getting a wife into a game, is Battle Line, which is a great game, and Lost Cities, both Renner Knizia games that are sort of numbers heavy. And it's not numbers heavy. There's no math really involved, but it's an easy jump from people that have played games using a standard deck of cards that have numbers on them to going to these type of games that also involve numbers, but use numbers for clarity's sake. It's like, oh, five is bigger than four, so I can use this five instead of the four, rather than having to make the leap to, you know, wooden cubes and things like that, that some of the Euro stuff gets hung up on. But go ahead, Christian.
I always recommend doing the dishes, vacuuming, cleaning up, and telling your significant other that you love them and how you feel about them, no matter if you just had a fight. And then if you get all of that foundation laid, you can play any board game with them you want, because you're winning as your side of the couple without all that other stuff. It doesn't matter how great the board game is. It's not going to work out.
And that's and relationship Twister, advice Twister. With Christian. Relationship advice with Christian.
That's a new segment.
Go ahead, Corey.
I said that's a new segment.
Yeah, we got to start that one up. It's Christian, it's going bad, man. You got to help me out.
All right. Well, thanks for your call, Jeff. Let's see. So it's going bad, and I got to help you out, huh? Well, I recommend tell her you love her. You know, just
tell her you love her. And the answer to every call.
Well, it's that and playing Olly Olly exclusively for the PlayStation Vita. Available now from the PlayStation Network. Ollie Ollie, let's players play.
All right, Mr. Ollie Ollie. I didn't let you talk about it. We moved right to tabletop time. Tabletop time! And you didn't get a chance to play it, so talk about it. So let's tell me about Ollie Ollie before we wrap things up for this week.
Well, I was just kidding with a callback to my fake plug. But with that, it's great. I bought it. I'm a PS Plus member, so I got it for $10. Whether or not it's worth more than that or that amount to you is up to you. But it's fantastic. It's frustrating. It's difficult. It's kind of like Cannibalt meets, I don't know, not Tony Hawk. It's not like Tony Hawk at all, but, you know, Cannibalt, or what was the iOS game, like Rat Skateboarding Rat or something like that. And they made a snowboarding one too.
Rat.
It's something like that. But it's really good. It's frustrating the in a good way, like a Super Meat Boy way. The controls are simple to get into, but difficult to pull off. And some of the challenges are incredibly frustrating and challenging, but if you're into that type of game, it's great, and the soundtrack is phenomenal, and it has a quick reload like Meat Boy, which is essential for the type of game that it is, because you'll fail and you'll be like, one more game, and then you'll be up two more hours. So check it out if you're into that kind of game. That's all.
I definitely want to check that out. It does look like a kind of game I would love. Corey, anything else that you wanted to hit before we wrap this up?
See, I think I mentioned everything. I've put in a lot of time into DayZ, and you know, we talked about how DayZ is kind of a weird, broken experience right now. But it, especially if you're open to, you know, having weird interactions with strangers, like where you meet everybody and immediately hit the surrender button, like it's kind of cool to check out right now. Other than that, I don't think we talked about Steam Machines. You had that on the list at one point.
Oh, yeah. What's your take on that? As the PC-centric guy, what are you excited? Do you think it's going to be a game changer?
So I'm excited about the idea of PC games opening up to the living room as well as the desk. I'm excited about what Valve can do with the controller. I'd really like to try more strategy games with the controller. My hands-on time so far has been pretty much just first-person shooters. I'm less excited about the first round of actual Steam Machines that some of the hardware partners are putting out, because I don't feel like they're really even defining the market of what we need these things to be.
Right.
I don't want to put a $2,000 computer in my living room, frankly. And I live in California. Like, my living room is basically my entire room. So, So I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around like spending $2,500 on a machine that I just hook up to my television and only has Linux on it. But in terms of like the long-term strategy, like, no one's ever lost any money betting on Valve.
Yeah. Right?
And there are a lot of benefits to this that probably aren't even going to play out in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty excited about it. I like the idea of like more couch co-op games on the PC. And it'd be really cool to see that happen through the SteamOS initiative.
Yeah, and I'm just excited about all of the energy that Valve seems to be putting into VR headsets. We saw that story this week about The Witness adding VR, because he went over, Jonathan Blow, who's the designer of The Witness and did Braid, went over to Valve and checked out their prototype, which is different than the Oculus, by the way. And he was so impressed with it that he's adding support to The Witness, which makes me super excited, because I want that. I'm ready, man. Bring it. Make it happen.
Do you feel like there are certain games that you just won't be able to play with like a virtual reality headset?
I do.
Are you ready for like everything?
No. I think it'll be a case basis. I think just like, well, I don't want to say just like motion control, because that has such a negative connotation, but there are certain games that you want to play with mouse and keyboard, and there's certain games you want to play with the controller, and there's going to be certain games you want to play with a VR headset. You know, I think there's going to be games that you don't want to play with that, and that'll be fine. But I am looking forward to those new experiences that are better because I'm playing them through a VR headset. And it looks like, you know, all the rumors say 2015 is when they'll start hitting the market, which is longer than I would like to wait, but exciting nonetheless.
I think it might be end of this year.
Really?
I mean, I was really impressed with the Oculus Crystal Cove prototype that they had at CES.
Oh, did you get a chance
to
put it on?
Have I told you my story about the Oculus Rift?
I don't think so. Tell me.
So I have an interesting history with Oculus Rift, in that I brought a dev kit home and hooked it up and tried to jump into Half-Life 2. And setting one of these things up is not hard. You can get one of these right now if you like want to develop a VR game. I think it's like $300 or so. But I spent 20 minutes with this developer kit, and then I threw up. Literally threw up. And which is a rare occurrence. The instructions clearly say, like, if you feel any discomfort, stop using. But I don't read instructions. So I booked a meeting at CES to go talk to Oculus and try their new prototype. And I was terrified, right? I waited until the last day of the show. I packed an extra shirt. I'm, like, trying to imagine how this is going to work if, like, I harf all over Palmer Luckey's shoes. And I put on this new prototype with the motion tracking or the persistence tracking. I'm getting all the technical terminology wrong, but like it's doing a better job of knowing where your head is through the positional tracking. It has some sensors on the front of it,
right?
And they fixed a lot of the motion blur issues. And I came out of it feeling great, like no motion sickness whatsoever.
Wow.
Total 180 experience for my development kit. So
that's
before,
very encouraging.
Yeah, if you'd asked me 2 months ago if I thought this was cool, like I wasn't gonna let it in my house. I was so terrified of it. I don't.
I mean,
get
only
motion
for
sickness.
Weight loss.
yeah. Only for dieting purposes. I don't get motion sickness from anything.
Oh man.
I don't like roller coasters necessarily, but I never throw up. And I came away from this new prototype 100% convinced.
Oh, that's so exciting. I mean, yeah, I haven't had a chance to try the headset since E3 last year, and I was very impressed with that. But in both those situations, I was playing very specific demos that didn't give me a lot of free range of motion. It was the Eve Online thing, where you were sort of in a cockpit,
right,
which makes more sense. It feels right. You know, you're not walking around, and then the Unreal demo, which was a little more constrained, but I was definitely worried about that. And I mean, you can't ship a product that makes people throw up, right? You know, I mean, you can't. So, so that's very encouraging. That,
and yet alcohol is sold everywhere.
Touche.
Use VR responsibly, kids.
All right, guys, this was a great episode. I really appreciate you coming by, Corey. This was awesome to having you, and hopefully you'll come back very soon.
Sure. Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah. This was a lot of
fun. Let's get an official plug. Where can people find you online? Twitter handle, yeah. And of course, to keep up to date with all the great things you're doing, PC.
Sure. So you can always find me at PC Gamer. PCGamer.com is our website, and we have the PC Gamer magazine that comes out monthly. Check your newsstands or subscribe. If you want to follow me, I am at Demiurge, DEMIURGE on Twitter. And I'll throw out a quick plug for the Gamers with Jobs conference call, which I still get to do with my buddies over at GWJ.
Great show.
That goes out every Wednesday.
One of my favorites.
Yeah. And
it's awesome.
It always a blast when Jeff is on that as well.
Yeah. Those guys are great. You know, Gamers with Jobs, we'll eventually have all those guys on the show, if I can persuade them. Gamers with Jobs was really one of my very first little online community homes when I way back in, I don't know, 2000, whatever, 1, 2, 3, whatever it was. And I, the first guild I ever got into when I started World of Warcraft on launch day was the Gamers with Job Guild. And it's just a warm, welcoming, awesome place to hang out with smart, intelligent, respectful people. And the podcast is fantastic too. So you should check it out. Christian, how about you, sir? What's your sitch this week? You're moved in. How'd your move go?
Yeah, well, so we're in boxes. We're in a new place, and there's still lots of work to be done. But it's awesome so far, so good. I'm learning. We're still in Los Angeles, just a different part. So I'm learning, you know, the traffic ins and outs of this part of town. But it's great so far, so good. Check in again. Well, I'll give you the full opinion. You'll have to come by. Well, once we get set up, we'll have a for real housewarming something or other.
And our entire audience is invited. Is that what you just said?
Yes, of course. If they're in town, come on over. No one will be able to fit, but we will have fun trying. It'd be like a clown car.
You know, I just signed a new lease too yesterday.
Same place or different place?
Different place. Have to move. Lame. But the place is good. Well, exciting. But
our rent is going down, so. This is with all the advances we've made in technology, there has to be a better way to move. One, if you have the money, hire professional movers. Two, if you hire professional movers, be prepared to feel to be as emasculated as you've ever felt in your life. Because when one guy carries like an 8x10 rug by himself and then a refrigerator by himself, and you're like, well, let me check this tweet.
Yeah, standing around waiting for people to
last
do.
Last time I did that, I bought pizza for the guys and I stayed out of the way.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, totally. But so worth the money if you have the income to use for it. I'd highly recommend it. After food, shelter, professional movers are the next on the list. If you're listening to this live right now or soon after it comes out, Wednesday, I do this show called Improv versus Stand Up. That's a regular show at Upright Citizens Brigade Los Angeles and Upright Citizens Brigade New York, where we're taking it to some comedy festivals. Wednesday will be at the San Diego Comedy Festival. And then you'll hear me talk about it as it gets closer over Valentine's Day, February 14th, 15th. I'll be at the awesome, I'll be returning to the North Carolina Comedy Arts Festival. And then February 11th is my next live What's New, which is a live show and podcast on the Nerdist Network. And listeners of this show might know Wombat, Stuart Knocht, is going to be in Los Angeles then also. And so we were thinking about maybe putting together a little meetup to coincide with the show, since the show is free. It could be a good way for people to get together and meet. That's what's going on. And your play's going on.
My play opened on Friday, which is why I haven't had a second to play video games, unfortunately, this week. But that changes today. Starting today, I have a few days off of rehearsals, and I will be gaming like mad. I have a bunch of awesome games to start. But I was in 12-hour days, and it was craziness. The tech week was just insane. But the show opened, and we got really great reviews, actually. Huffington Post gave us a great review, and Broadway World.com gave us a great review. And if anybody's in L.A., I really, really would urge you to try to come see this show. It's something I'm extraordinarily proud of. We busted our butts on it, and I think it shows. It's really one of the most exciting, wild plays you'll ever see. It's called The 39 Steps. It's based on the Hitchcock film, but it's done with only four actors and a few props, and that includes plane chases and train chases and car chases and insane over-the-top stuff, but it's all done theatrically with a lot of ingenuity and inventiveness. And you can find out a link to buy tickets if you go to jeffcannata.com. That's JeffCannata, two N's and one T. Also, you can follow me on Twitter all week at Jeff Cannata with two N's and one T. This week, at Peppered Gamers said that DLC is destined to last for centuries. So thank you for that. We appreciate it. Again, send feedback to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. We love seeing stuff there. And every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific time, we stream live at 5x5.tv/live. We hope to have you hanging out with us. And until next week, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place. We'll be right back.